It's a lovely diagram he's got there.
I'll explain this then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you do it?
Yes.
Did you?
Yeah.
Artist in the making, eh?
Well, I have a woman who does my drawings for me. I send her a drawing and she makes it look pretty.
Oh.
But what I do is I take incredibly complex things and make them simple, because that's better for me. and because I make them simple, I take all the steps out of it. So if something has 13 steps and everybody says, oh, it takes 13 steps to get from there to there and it's at least 5 years, I think, why? Why is it? Why does it take five years to get there or whatever?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not training to be a doctor. I don't dissect your brain. I don't do any, you know, I don't do brain surgery or anything. and I know how the brain works probably better than most brain surgeons, who could tell you which bit of the brain they could operate on and what it does.
Yeah, the physical.
But can't tell you how to actually mend yourself. Right.
Yeah, well, it's
so
just the mind.
When
it?
I read things, I'll read all these big technical words in it, and I have to have a dictionary at the side of me and sort of work out. But all I'm looking for from anything is the concept. And most of us have read a book about something, and you read it, and it sounds very interesting, and you get the point after about three pages. Come on in, I haven't started yet. You get the point after about three pages, and then they hammer it to death for 189 pages, don't they?
Yeah.
And I think, well, that could have been a one-page book. Because you don't have to keep convincing... If you convince me, if you tell me something that convinces me, you don't have to tell me 189 times to actually get it in my head.
You've got the point.
So what I tend to do is look at things, read lots of things, read lots of different things, and then I combine the two ideas. So I take one concept and I blend it with another. Let me take a couple of chairs. So, for instance, although I'm a trained hypnotherapist and I also trained in energy and motion, and the idea of energy and motion is that when we have bad feelings, we tend to change our body shape. So, you know, should we get everybody doing this?
I
haven't started yet, but... okay, can I get everybody to do this? What I want you to do is think about the happiest thing you can think of, okay? Just think about the happiest thing you can think of. And now what I want you to do is try and remain happy. Come on in. It's all right, I haven't started. try and think of the happiest thing you can think of. And now I want to change your body shape and do that. Right? Okay? Try and remain happy while you're doing that.
Remain happy?
Yeah, try and remain happy while you're doing it. You can't, can you?
Yeah.
Okay, now think of something miserable. Come on in. No, I haven't started yet. Fine. Think of something really miserable. Right. Now, while you're thinking that miserable thing, I want you to do that. Okay? Just open your shoulders and everything else. Okay? Try and stay miserable. Nobody follows instructions. You can't, because what we're doing... Come on in, I haven't started.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, this is a pre-session. okay, so your body shape adapts to how you feel. And you can change that in an instant. So if you get a telephone call, you know, it's your son, we're expecting a new baby, you go from normal to, wow, you know, and the whole body tingles. Because everything that you hear, every cell in your body hears. Right? And including self-talk. So when we go, I'm a disgusting person, it goes, yes, you're a disgusting person. And it only goes into that. And the idea of energy and motion is that when we have thoughts that affect us, it turns us into this sort of... But it's not as vivid as I'm showing it.
No.
It actually goes inside and lots of bits tense up and things, and this is why we get ulcers and all sorts of bits and bobs, because we tense bits of a body up. And the idea of energy in motion is, although you can get the brain to switch off that muscle thing by get rid of the problem, and then it switches off those muscles, you can do it the other way around. You can actually have a go with the muscles and release it from the muscles, which then has a different message to the brain. So it doesn't need to store that rubbish anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, come on in. I haven't even started yet. so it lets go of it.
Yeah.
And you can do it from either direction. Mm-hmm. So it's a really nice thing. And just recently I've studied mesmerism. Which I don't know if anybody knows about it, but it was the sort of forerunner for hypnosis. And so what they did was big sweeping movements where they ran the hands past you. And it fell out of favour because it was heavily linked with clairvoyancy and lots of other things. And it was usually practised in what they called mental asylums. Come on in. And so it was people of weak will, they called it, or feeble minds. And because they were, it worked on them, it was sort of like they were open to this sort of suggestion. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it sort of fell out of favour, because it was like, as soon as they realised hypnosis could bring on the same effects that mesmerism did, they said, well, why do all that sort of passing of hands and all this if you can just sort of swing a watch and people go into hypnosis? So it sort of fell out of favour. But hi, come on in. No, I haven't even started. You're not disturbing me at all. Come on, I haven't started yet. And still 10 minutes to go. So if you link the two with what I've just told you about the body and the way it feels and how it tenses up, mesmerism was actually working on your aura and things like that. So it was doing this thing of energy. And if you put two people together and you put them in close proximity, you can feel energy. I mean, it's not a spooky thing. It's how we all work. Come on in. It's all right. It's wonderful how people do that. I'm small enough. I haven't even started yet, so you're fine. So it's not you that's late, it's me that's early. So I worked out that mesmerism was actually the best of both worlds. It combined these two things that I've only just come across and that people have had separately to now into this old-fashioned idea that died out. So it took a bit of finding out about it because it dates back to the 1870s or something. But it's really fascinating now I've got there. And it's actually teaching me about hypnosis as well and putting different concepts into my mind. So that's why I do all that.
It's interesting because when my son was a baby, he just wouldn't stop crying. He was always scrunched up and everything. There's a last-minute thing. I can't remember what it's called, though, but we took him to some place in Kermington and he just sort of didn't touch his head, but like that. And after the third session, he was a calmer baby. And when he first went, he'd just be scrunched up and he couldn't move. And then by the third session, he was moving. It was strange to watch it.
It's a strange thing that everybody thinks that illness is either mind or body. And they can't be. It's got to be a combination of the two. You can't have a physical illness without having the mental process that actually puts it there. Because your mind's in charge of your body. So every day you're breathing in and out, and have done since the day you were born. And your heart's done the ba-dum, 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 sometimes faster, sometimes slower, since the day you were born. It's running all these systems. It does absolutely everything for you, which is the talk I've got today, is how much it does for you, and how little your conscious brain does. It does so little. It's just amazing. Shall I? So the passing of hands and things is just amazing. And we're all made up of energy, so it's just involving other people's energies. And the reason that things like I do work, although you can do a lot of it yourself, sometimes it's this authority from outside of you that has more influence. So, for instance, if you go to a doctor and he says, right, diagnosis is you've got 6 months to live, you will die in 6 months, even if he's got the wrong notes in front of him, because every cell in your body hears, I'm going to die, better go home and prepare my will. And the body starts to go, well, we've only got 6 months to go, starts shut down. Okay, so if that can happen, just the opposite can happen. If somebody gives you hope, suddenly there's the old stuff, the doctor got hope now, you know. And I've got a friend who's been alive for about 8 years now after being told he had 6 months to live. Mm-hmm. And he's just got a better diet and looks after himself more and doesn't put himself under a lot of stress. And just keeps going. In fact, I think they probably cut his benefits off if they realised that he was still alive. Okay, so, hoping not to cover any of that back over again. For everybody that walked in while I was talking, I actually started a bit earlier, but with different topics, so you're absolutely fine. So don't think you disturbed me because you didn't. Okay, so thank you, everybody. such a good turnout. You're a lovely audience, so much better than last week. No, I can't say that. This is the first talk I've ever given for BSSK. And there's some method of giving feedback about talks. So I do hope you give me some good feedback at the end, because that means they'll let me do another one. Okay? Right, so today's topic is, I'll have to remind myself now, transform your life on automatic. And all my themes are very similar to each other. And like I said earlier, I'd like to explain things quite simply. So the more I studied this, and the more technical things I read, the simpler it gets. Because I keep just looking at all these concepts and saying, oh crikey, that's how that works. Mm-hmm. And when you understand the brain, it's even though actually nobody really understands physically how it works, or why it works, or how it can pass a message down there to there and do it in the language that you learnt when you were a kid. Mm-hmm. Nobody understands that. Come on in. Nobody really understands that. But the way in which the brain works happens with such regularity that you can actually predict what it's going to do and how it's going to work. And I didn't bring any cards or anything, but if you go on my website, which is thethoughtcoach.com, so it won't take too much remembering, is I've actually listed 11 different ways that the brain works that actually affect how you take things on board, why you have problems, why they keep recurring and so on. So today's about how to actually run on automatic. Well, the great news is you're already doing it. So if we were to consider this as being the way the brain works rather than the actual physical size of the brain, in this room would be your unconscious. This whole room would be your unconscious. If your conscious was in here as well, it would represent probably my little finger. Right? So when we think we're clever, we think we're clever with our conscious bit, because that's what we do our thinking with. But in reality, it's your unconscious that's running you. So for instance, I'm not consciously thinking of everything I'm saying, so rubbish might come out in a minute, but it's coming from my unconscious, because I've rehearsed this so many times, and I've read so many things, and I've learnt so much, that it now goes, well, I'll do that. Okay? Now, 80% of everything you know about life, you learnt before you were six. Okay? So a bit of maths for you all here, because I can't do it for you, is I want you to think of your age. I want you to take 5 off it. Okay? That's how old 80% of the way you think about life is out of date. That's amazing, isn't it? Okay? More amazing for some people. Okay, so if you think about all your thought processes, the actual conscious brain holds nine bits of data. Now, you don't have to be a computer technician to understand that 9 bits of data is hardly anything. So if I now read out my phone number to you a single digit at a time, and then carried on talking, you could either remember my phone number or listen to me talking, but you can't do both. That's how little fills up your conscious mind. So the rest of it comes from your unconscious. And your unconscious it was programmed when you were born, so it runs your heart and lungs and everything else. It does all your health, your temperature, your pH levels, the whole thing is just run automatically by the unconscious part of your brain. So like I said earlier, I'm not going to get technical and say which part of the brain, because I never remember which they are. But if you see the brain as running in two ways, the really small conscious bit that you're in charge of, and the unconscious bit that sort of does it on its own. And it does it on its own because, first of all, it was programmed to be like that, so it knows all about your body and that, and as soon as you're born, that's it. It runs everything. But then we learn things. And if you understand that 80% of it comes from before you were six, so 80% of all our lessons about life were actually shown to us by somebody else. They weren't things that we experienced or whatever, apart from walking and talking probably, but even with that you were encouraged and aided and things like that. And as with most things in life, if you actually fell over when you were walking, your mum didn't say, that walking's not for you, mate. She went, pick you back up on your feet, shook you, and off you walked again. So everything that we've ever done, there's always a first time of doing it. And we have that sort of naive feel that, oh, nobody else feels like this, and oh God, this is terrible. And it doesn't matter what age you are, if you're doing something for the first time, you feel like that. Because you've consciously got to think about it, or you might have to read the instructions, and you all feel a bit silly. And I've got a doctor friend who's a brilliant doctor, and actually assesses other doctors for fitness for practice. And when I chat to her, she is so naive about lots of things in this world, because she hasn't come across it, because she spent all the time focused on becoming a wonderful mum and a wonderful doctor. And some of the things I talk to her about, I think, well, everybody knows this, kid at five will know this. And she'll go, what's that then, Stephen? And this is one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. Mm. Right. So everything we have to do new, we have to sort of somehow get it in there. Now, when we repeat it enough times, we then pass it over to the unconscious, and we go, you get on with it. So for those of you here that drive, when you first got in a car and they went, right, I'm going to show you how to change gears, and you get sat there and you go, okay, I'll put the clutch in, right, okay, now put it in gear, okay, and they go, right, now you've got to let the clutch out, but at the same time you've got to press this one down, but not too much. Come on in, fine. And you go, and then he goes, mirror. And you go, mirror, I'm doing this and this, both at the same time. And you feel like it's impossible to do that, and mirror, and steer, and do all the other things. But now you get in the car, and you put it in gear, and you just do that, and you're not even aware of it anymore. And we do lots of things while we're in that state. So when I talk to people about hypnosis, for instance, they'll say, oh, you can't get me in hypnosis. And I'll go, you've been in a trance today already. I can guarantee you every single one of you have been in trance already today. Because we drift between these states. So when you read a book, you actually, when you open it up, you start reading words on a page. Within a moment, you're actually in the story. Somebody comes in the room, says your name, and you're out of the story, back into the room. Okay, yeah, I'm busy. And then you're back into the book. As soon as you read the next line, you're back into the book again. You're not reading words. All that's automated, right? So that all runs for you. So what we have to do is, and I'll get over to this now. So this is my idea. This is my concept. This is baggage reclaim. So we've probably all been on holiday where we've handed in the cases at the airport. And then you go on your flight, you get to the other end, and you have to go and fetch them back again. So this is everybody's mind. We have loops of things going on. And it runs on a constant thing. And the idea is that we have things called associations. An association is something that triggers you off to remember something else. So, for instance, a little old lady walks past you in the street, smelling of a perfume, and suddenly you're thinking of your auntie, who wears a very similar perfume, and it's instant. You don't have to think about it, you don't have to go, oh, smell, little old lady, auntie, smells a bit like auntie. You're actually thinking, why am I thinking about my auntie? And it's not until a few seconds later you think, ah, that woman went past who smelled like that. Right? So we've got all these associations that we have. And on your baggage reclaim, everything that is uncompleted, every bit of hassle you had in your life that you haven't put to bed yet, is still there. And it runs around on this conveyor belt, okay? And anything comes up similar, and it goes, oh, crikey, yeah, you don't remember that. And it adds it to it. So if you can imagine, all these are different things. So let's talk about relationships, for instance. So every bag on here is yours, all about different things. And so we have an association, so I've got a female up here, so I'll say a partner says something to her that's quite rude or hurts her in some way. What happens is, she doesn't just react to what he said. And us guys don't understand this, we go, I only said that. And you're in the doghouse for 2 weeks, and you think, I only said that, I can't remember. And you try apologising, and it doesn't work. Because what's happened is, she's now fetched the relationship bag off the conveyor belt, opened the lid, put this new thing in, and then stirred it up with all the rest. And gone, bastard, all men are bastards. I can't stand men. Same at another last bloody one. I can't. And that's what's happening. So it's not the particular incident at that time. It's all the other crap that you've got in there. So if you went on holiday and you had to take every suitcase for the last 10 years that you took away with you, with the clothes in, you'd have a massive trolley with all this old baggage. But we do that with our heads. If you looked in this thing and there was like you going on a winter holiday and all that sort of summer stuff, none of that's any use to you. Right? And if it's from 10 years ago and you've got a caftan in there and things that used to fit you and used to look good on you, but they don't anymore, you don't want them. So my idea is that when you actually notice something's bothering you, you actually don't just look at that instant, you actually look at why it's had such an impact on you. So that one phrase of saying that somebody said that's really upset you, instead of concentrating on that and then having this massive row that's never going to resolve itself, because it's not about that, you actually look, why do I feel this way about this? Now, as the blurb said for this talk, it's all of us know on a conscious level what we should be doing. But we don't actually do it. And in fact, every single one of us here, I bet, if your friend said to you exactly the problem that you've got that you're thinking about, you would have the answer for it, okay? And you would tell them precisely what you know you should do for yourself. But we don't. And the reason for this is, when on this loop, now let's say something really traumatic's happened to you in your life. And most of my clients will come and I'll find the cause of virtually everything in their life that's screwing them up. And I'll go straight to that cause, because that's the one to sort out. You know, if you go 10-pin bowling and you knock a pin down and you wait for the next thing to come up, it drops down, it puts the pin back, doesn't it? And then you knock another one down, it puts the pin back. If you hit the middle pin and it knocks the rest down, you don't need to do it anymore. Okay? So I always look for the cause of things. And the cause of things is quite often something. It'll either be one of two things. Either the person will remember what it is but doesn't really want to go there and revisit it, in which case they'll have that problem forever because you have to go back there and sort it in. Or it'll be something so traumatic that the brain will go, never going there again. I don't want to touch that. I don't even want you to know what it is. Right? And that's to you, that's not to me. That's not somebody saying, I don't you want you. They won't know what it is. So they'll come along with that, and lots of people will say to me, but can you deal with it? I don't know what it is. And I go, yeah, because I'll find it. And I'll take people back, and I'll find what that is and help them with it. And even if the brain then won't let go of it, I'll actually say to it, okay, it's that traumatic that you're not going to show her it, so can you throw it away then? Because it's of no use to you. Why would you want to hold on to something that's of no use to you? And if it's never going to tell her what it is, then why should she hang on to it anymore? So I convince the brain to throw it out. And neither of us know what it is. But as soon as it's thrown out. Because the way your brain works is, it doesn't know the difference between reality and imagination. So I think we've all had that dream where our partner cheats. And we wake up the next morning and we give them hell. Well, it must be real. I had a bloody dream about it. Okay? And of course it's not. But we, if we imagine it so. And the more vivid we imagine something, the easier it is to get rid of it. Because when we have a thought and it affects us, it's not just the thought that goes in there, it's every feeling with it. So all the associations, everything that triggers it, all go back into your brain and they make this. And so to alter it, you need to go back in there and say that's not the case. And as soon as it changes, it actually remakes new connections. And the old connections aren't there anymore. So when we have panic attacks and things, and there's lots of sorts of therapies that will say, you know, well, when you start having the attack, you know, breathe deeply or do this or do that or do the other. Well, to me, that's waiting too late, because as soon as you're in a panic attack or whatever, there's not much of anything you can do about it. And the further you're into it, the worse it gets. And I've been there myself, so I know. So the idea is to switch off all the associations that actually attach itself to that panic attack. And as soon as you switch all those associations off, you actually get to the point where something that would have triggered you for a panic attack doesn't anymore. This is about, this is like the old biscuit scenario, where you think, oh, I've got some biscuits in the cupboard, I mustn't have the biscuit. Right? Now what you're thinking about is biscuits. And your brain doesn't understand the difference between mustn'ts, shouldn'ts, couldn'ts, haven'ts. Anything that's negative, the brain doesn't understand. You know, you can throw as many negatives in the word, it doesn't turn it into a positive. Right? So as soon as you think, I mustn't have the biscuit, you're sat in your chair, I mustn't have the biscuit. There you go, right, no, I mustn't have the biscuit. I mustn't have the biscuit. I mustn't go in the kitchen and have the biscuit. I mustn't. Just the one then. I mustn't have the whole packet. The whole packet. The whole packet. The whole packet. I mustn't start the next packet. And you're actually just giving yourself those instructions. So you've gone from there's biscuits in the cupboard to must have a biscuit, must have a biscuit, mustn't eat the whole packet, and so on. So we always have to turn things into a positive. And the positive isn't not having a biscuit, because that's still a negative. So the positive would be, I feel like a biscuit, so what do I really want? And sometimes we're just lacking company. I mean, we're never hungry when we're busy.
No, that's true.
When you're really busy, you never get hungry. And then you get a 10-minute break, and suddenly you go, oh my God, I'm starving. Or we'll finish work for the day and we get home, and if you live on your own, it's sort of like, oh God, you know. Oh God, I'll have a biscuit, you know, I'll have a glass of wine, I'll have another glass of wine. Don't finish the bottle, whatever you do, don't finish the bottle. Don't start the next one. I don't drink much, I spill most of it. So what we're going to talk about is, a quarter of an hour, whizzing through this. And I've got all sorts of different things to tell you tomorrow as well. Okay, so there's a way of talking to the brain, to the unconscious brain. Now, if I talk to it, I talk to it with authority. So it might accept it. But I do have to explain it along the way. But what I'd like you all to be able to do when you leave here today is be able to talk to your unconscious. Would you all like that?
Yeah?
A bit more enthusiasm? Is there anybody who would find that spooky or anything, would not want to do that? So I just came across somebody the other day that went, oh no, I hate the idea of being able to talk to my brain. You do anyway, because it listens. It listens to everything you ever say. So when you say, oh, I'm really clumsy, it will make you trip over, just to prove it. Because it wouldn't lie to you, would it? You wouldn't lie to yourself. So everything you tell it, I'm bad at spelling, it'll go, right, okay, you're bad at spelling, I'll, you know. And you won't ever get round to looking up how to get better at things. Because you just accepted what it is you've already got. And because we accept things, we don't do things about anything. And we also fear change. And that's crazy, because everything you do now that you enjoy, at one time you'd never done it. You had to do it that first time to go, oh, that's brilliant, I'd like to do that again. I met a guy once who said, I never go on holiday anywhere I've never been before. And I went, where'd he go? And he went, all over the world. I went, why? He said, I've been in the RAF. So they took him places while he was working. So he felt that he could go back there again. But it's a totally crazy idea that change is bad or whatever. But as we mentioned before, that if you've got this deep-seated problem, you'll get it as a sort of preservation thing. And I'll just talk about myself for a second. I had claustrophobia from the age of about 14 when I first noticed it, until about 6 months ago. And during the last 10 years, come on through, it never bothered me. And I had a few things in a row that actually worked on the associations with it. And to cut a very long story short, I was frightened of needles when I was about 12, 13. And you had to have them at school, and you queued up outside this room where you heard kids doing blood-curdling screams. And the news would paddle down the line, they just broke a needle in Fred's arm. Oh, John's got the blunt needle now. It gets blunt as they keep doing it. And you'd hear this scream and you go, oh, it must be. So I was terrified of needles. And my mum tried to tell me that I had to have this injection because otherwise I would get polio. And that didn't mean anything to me. I just thought it was a mimic of the hole. I mean, it just... So she told me this story about... if you got polio, you had to be put in a thing called an iron lung. Now, for the younger ones amongst you, I have no idea what an iron lung was. but it was a method of actually helping you breathe. And they put you into like a metal chest, and just your head stuck out, and your arms, and your feet. And they sealed it, and they pumped the pressure in and out, and it just made loads of work for you. But when my mother described it, she mentioned this chest thing, and I visualised a pirate's chest and being folded over and put in this chest and the lid shut down. And it terrified me. So, and I was terrified about the injection, and I'm terrified about this, and I'm terrified about not being able to breathe while I'm in there and dying, and then, of course, if you put it in a coffin, it's just the same thing. So I got all these things mixed up. And over the few weeks before this attack I had, my father had collapsed while I was out with him, and I thought he'd died. I had to put my fingers down his throat and all sorts of things. Come on through. And my lovely assistant, Trudy. So that had happened. Somebody posted a thing about inoculations and arguing both cases whether you should or shouldn't have them. Somebody posted a picture of an iron lung. And I went to this event where a guy... This shows the difference between the conscious and the unconscious. This guy had actually said to me, he'd been abroad, and he was speeding or something, and the policeman asked him for a bribe, and he wouldn't bribe him. That's the bit I heard consciously. Unconsciously, I'd heard that he'd been put in jail for 2 days while he wouldn't pay this bribe. Prison? Claustrophobia, something I'd always feared of, the injustice of going somewhere where they might not have laws like we have here and they'd bang you up. I'd always feared that. And 2 minutes after this guy told me that, I went to the toilets, and as soon as I opened the door, I thought something's going wrong here, got into the second door, and I had this massive panic attack. And the heart started beating, and I thought I was going to collapse, and I couldn't breathe, and I was at least having a heart attack, and I had about 4 hours of barely being able to move, and I had the patio door open where I was at. It was the middle of the night, and it got to about 4 in the morning. By that time, I was suicidal. I decided I couldn't possibly do this work, because how could I help anybody who felt like that? How I had the audacity to think I could help somebody like that. And I felt the worst I've ever felt in my life. And I couldn't do anything about it, and that frustrated me even more, which made me think I couldn't do this job, I couldn't go on holiday ever again, I couldn't, it's all the things I couldn't do. And after about 4 hours, the panic subsided, and I got into this sort of anger state of like, the hell am I going to do now? And so, with a technique I'm going to show in a few minutes, I actually talked to my unconscious, and I said, look, you think that you're protecting me by keeping me out of a confined space. The lesson I'd learned was, if you don't go in a confined space, it'll not kill you. Right? So stay out of confined spaces. So every time I went to a confined space, the unconscious bit went, this'll kill you, Stephen. So it was willing to do anything it could to keep me out of that confined space. And once I twigged to this, and once I twigged to all this string of events, like my father collapsing and all this sort of thing, so I got all this worked out. So as soon as it gave me enough energy to actually go, okay, I can fight this, I just thought to myself, right, okay, right, what you're doing to me, you think is protecting me. It's not. It's more likely you will kill me. I've been suicidal the last 4 hours. I've had heart palpitations that could, any one of those could have stopped my heart. I couldn't breathe, and the worst thing in the world is not being able to breathe, isn't it? Because it's just so instant. I mean, you're not really seconds, have you? So I said, right, okay, I want you, I've worked out all the associations now, why you think that's bad for me. And I've worked out now that there's no danger. As long as there's air in that space, I'm fine. All right? And there is air. There's always air in small rooms and things. So I said, okay, you can switch off every association that I've just listed now. I want you to turn it off now, and I want you to turn it off for good. I never, ever want that feeling again. Okay, don't let me have that feeling again, because you're doing me more harm than good. And your unconscious looks after you in the best way possible every minute of your life. It doesn't want to do anything to harm you. But of course, it thought it was doing me some good. So the minute it knew it was harming me rather than helping me, it was willing to switch it off. So I said, go through all the associations, let me know when you finish and switch them all off. 2 minutes. 2 minutes later, fast asleep. I went home, I went in my spare bedroom, nice dark cupboard there, I opened the door, went in, couldn't have even thought of doing this before, went in, shut the door behind me, spent 5 minutes here in the pitch black, a little bit of light under the door, so I'm fine. Went to get out, door handle jammed. So after a few seconds of doing the... That was bloody stupid. So I just stood back and thought, light under the door, fresh air, I'm fine there. And there was nothing. There was no panic. There was nothing there. And as soon as I put my hand on the door, once the thing had subsided, it was like... And I was out. Absolutely brilliant. So, would you like to learn all how to do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Come on in. So, what I'd like you all to do is... Shall I get my glamorous assistant down the front? Right. Okay. The easiest way of doing this is a thing of balance. Right? Because I'm going to do this on a standing basis, if you can't stand, you can do ask for a different way. So what I'm going to ask you to do is, I'm going to ask you to talk to your unconscious. And all we're going to get to do today is give you a yes, that it exists. Okay, because once it tells you it exists, you know it exists, and it knows that you know it exists, you can now talk to it. It only takes one time. Right? So if you're all willing to do this, so what I want you to do in a few minutes is pair off and do this, and I'm just going to... You know what's coming, don't you?
I do.
So I want you to...
already done it on me. Quite profound.
Yeah, you put your feet together. Well, nearly together. Okay, you look at somewhere above the person's head, fix your gaze, and then we're just going to talk to your unconscious, and then we're going to say to it, look, thank you in every way for everything you've already done for me. All right? And in the future, I'm going to talk to you about a few little blips that are going wrong, and I'm going to get you to correct them. But everything you do is brilliant, okay? And if you do anything wrong ever, it's because I put it in there. All right? It was me that gave you the loop that you're actually running there. So actually, I'm just going to get you to say, to recognise your existence today, and just show me with a yes. And the yes can be anything you like. And if you're with a partner, I just want you to do something like that, okay? Just so that it gives it an idea of what to do. Because you don't want this thing where it goes and you go, was that a yes or not? We want a very profound yes from it. Because as soon as you get a profound yes, you'll understand that you do have an unconscious and it's under your control, not the other way around. Okay? And you can start working with it then to have a better life. So, if you can't stand or you've got back problems or whatever, you can even do it with your eyes. So you can get it to shut your eyes and squeeze them tight or something. But just ask it for yourself to actually do something internally that will give you a very definite answer of yes. So it's just say, prove to me that you exist, give me a yes. Now it does exist, so we don't need to ask for a no. Okay? So you're willing to do that with me? Okay, everybody up that wants to stand up. Now, if you're not paired up, find somebody to pair up with. Just put your hand up if you're not paired up with anybody. You're not, there's somebody behind you. Yeah, now don't throw them violently to the floor, come do you.
Alright.
Yeah. Is everybody else paired up? Okay, you know what to do now? Just thank your unconscious for everything it does for you and hoping it gets right. And then just talk to it nicely and then say, I want you to give a yes to show me you exist. And you do that internally as well. Okay? Off you go. Right. Okay. What I'm going to do is, take a few deep breaths first. Get yourself relaxed. Right. My glamorous assistant will now come round and send you some notes. I've also recorded it, so I'll send you the recording if you like. So you can give me your email address, just put your name and the email address around. And I'll send you notes and I'll send you all the things as I invent them. Thank you for joining in today. Thank your unconscious all the time. Your unconscious is a gatekeeper to your... it has a gatekeeper to your mind. And it's getting past that gatekeeper all the time because Everything it does, it's in protective mode. So it's like a small child, but a very small, very intelligent child. And treat it like you would your own child. So if you just chastise it all the time, you know, don't put your finger in that electrical socket, it will. Okay, so just tell it nice things. Thank it for everything it does for you. Because, I mean, we are the most amazing things on the planet. The fact that with all our complexities, that we actually live to any age at all is just a blooming miracle. Right? We're a collection of 75 trillion cells all working in harmony. I mean, that is just the most amazing thing. So just thank it for dealing with all these complexities for you. And when you ask it for any changes, you have to put it in a positive thing. You can't just say, I don't want that anymore. Right? Tell it what you do want. And the same with everything in life. Everything we want out of life, if we phrase it negatively, that's what we get. You know? If you're skidding and you look at a tree and you go, I don't want to hit that tree, I don't want to hit that tree, you hit the bloody tree. Because that's what you're concentrating on. And anybody who plays golf, you know, there's a water thing. Don't, whatever you do, don't knock it in that pond. Okay. Every time. Right? Whereas if you go, okay, I want it on that green over there, it's far more likely to go on that green over there because that's what you're thinking about. Right? So with everything you do, remember the positive side of it. And if you're thinking of negative thoughts, like I say, that's what you're heading towards, you need to change it. And the easiest way to change it is think, well, what's the opposite to what I'm thinking? Because if you've got a negative thought and you think of the opposite, it's got to be a positive, hasn't it? Absolutely has to be. And if it's like the biscuit thing, well, you can't do the, no, I won't have a biscuit because you're still talking about biscuits. But you can actually say, well, that probably means I need a glass of water. Or I need to go outside and have a few bits of fresh air. I need to go for a walk. Or it could be, I'm just missing company. That's why I feel hungry. You know, I'll phone a friend or go on Skype or do something like that. So it's all about being positive in life. So I want that positivity to remain while you go and fill in the form saying how wonderful this talk. Thank you very much.